from KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, immigrant communities are bracing for nationwide ICE raids expected to begin Sunday. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents are planning to target migrant families who've been ordered deported, but may also detain immigrants who happen to be on the scene. President Trump in June canceled last-minute similar planned raids. We look at the latest developments and their role in the Trump administration's broader immigration agenda. Join us next on Forum after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Several Bay Area cities are reiterating their sanctuary status in the wake of reports that ICE agents will conduct raids in major cities nationwide. The plan is to arrest 2,000 undocumented immigrants. Federal officials say ICE agents are targeting recent migrants who've been ordered deported. We look at how the raids are likely to be carried out, what's driving this move by the Trump administration, as the immigration crisis on the border continues to dominate headlines. We're joined now by San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo. Good morning, Sam Liccardo.
Good morning, Mina.
So, Mayor Liccardo, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Has the city of San Jose been given any information on this raid from federal officials?
No, we don't really communicate with ICE officials directly. We certainly heard that large cities will be targeted, so we are doing all we can to reach out with our partners in the Rapid Response Network, many nonprofit organizations and churches, to ensure that we get information out and ensure our community is ready.
And what is your message to immigrant communities in San Jose?
Well, first, we want to make sure people are aware of their rights, that they ensure that if any federal agents are coming into their homes, they better have warrants. We're encouraging folks to videotape the interactions to ensure if there's not a warrant or consent, and that we have that evidence, and so that we can take legal action if there are violations of rights. And obviously, through the Rapid Response Networks, we want to get folks access to legal representation where they need it.
Are you saying that you're concerned there will be violations of rights, that these raids by ICE agents could be carried out illegally in some cases?
Well, I'm not suggesting that ICE agents are out there doing it right now. We just want to make sure if they're going to be doing it, that they're abiding by the Fourth Amendment. And, you know, I think it's important also to recognize that this getting information out and exchanging information is more than just about being ready for what might happen, but also we know that there are a lot of false reports of ICE raids in communities, which are incredibly disruptive, and we want to make sure we're actually verifying where ICE activity is happening, where it's not, so parents can feel at least more comfortable about sending their kids to school and going to work and doing the things they need to do in their daily lives.
Will San Jose cooperate with ICE in any of these arrests, any of these cases that they're pursuing?
Our police department does not engage in any way in ICE enforcement activity. And that's not a new phenomenon. That's something we've been doing since the 1980s. And that's really the course for most major cities that recognize that local police departments should not be used as deputized ICE agents for lots of reasons, primarily because we know it disrupts our ability to develop trust in communities where we need witnesses to come forward, we need people to call 911, we need people to provide information about drug activity or gang activity, and that just isn't going to happen if people are afraid of calling the police because there might be some deportation risk.
You mentioned that these raids can be extremely disruptive. You also shared your message to immigrant communities. What are you advising broader residents in San Jose to do or to be on the lookout for?
Well, certainly, if they see ICE activity in their neighborhood, we'd like to know so that way we can ensure the communities are well informed. And, of course, we do want folks to call the local Rapid Response Network. There are several Rapid Response Networks throughout the Bay Area, and in the city of San Jose and the county of Santa Clara, the number is 408-290-1144.
And before I let you go, Mayor Liccardo, I just wanted to ask you about the census decision by President Trump. He has now basically called off his attempt to get a citizenship question on the census and asked agencies to provide all the legal information possible that would provide some insight into the number of citizens in various jurisdictions. The City of San Jose and the Black Alliance for Just Immigration filed that lawsuit against the Department of Commerce. Your case, I believe, is still pending. So how did the Supreme Court's decision and this recent action by President Trump, how does that affect your case? Do you know?
Well, it affirmed the district court decision in our case, at least in substantial part. And, you know, we're just obviously happy to see that, you know, justice prevailed here ultimately. But in many ways, the damage has been done by this administration. Hmm. And we've got a lot of work to do in immigrant communities, which is a large portion of our city. About 40% of our community was born in a foreign country. And so we've got a lot of work to do in many neighborhoods to ensure that people will still respond to the census. And we know that's critical for federal resources in our community and for representation.
San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, thank you for talking with us this morning.
Thanks, Mina. Have a great day.
You too. Let me tell you who is joining us now. We have Dr. Deep Gulasekaram. He's a professor of law at Santa Clara University School of Law, where he teaches constitutional and immigration law. He's also co-author of The New Immigration Federalism. Good morning to you, Deep Gulasekaram.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Mickey Kaus with us. He's a journalist and immigration activist. He writes at KausFiles.com. Good morning, Mickey Kaus. Mickey Kaus, are you with us? Well, let's try to get that line with Mickey Kaus going. Meantime, we also have Ted Hessen. He's an immigration reporter for Politico, and he joins us by Skype. Good morning, Ted Hessen.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us. President Trump spoke to reporters on the White House lawn not that long ago. Let's listen to a brief cut of what he had to say.
But when people come into our country, we take those people out, and we take them out very legally. They all have papers, and it's a process, and I have an obligation to do it.
And he confirmed, President Trump, that the raids will happen Sunday. Ted Hessen, what else did he say? Were you able to glean any additional information from his remarks?
Well, first of all, as you mentioned, he did confirm that these raids were going to go forward on Sunday. And it's actually kind of extraordinary to see the president going out and broadcasting the fact that ICE is moving forward with enforcement operations before they do. It's been a longstanding position of the agency not to make public what they're going to do before they move forward with enforcement. And this is the second time Trump has done this. It was only a few weeks ago that he actually tweeted that earlier ICE raids were going forward, which he then postponed about a week later. So I guess we'll see how this moves forward. It's unprecedented in that way. As for other new information that he gave us here, I wouldn't say there was anything specific about them. He did say that these actions would target criminals, but he also said at the same time, contradictory information, that they would target people who had crossed the border without authorization, and they would send them back.
Well, some would actually call that a crime and say that they were criminals. But yes, all 2,000 of those targeted have removal orders, Ted Hessen?
My understanding from the earlier planned operation was that it would target people with final orders of removal and specifically look at migrant families who had gone through an expedited court docket and been ordered removed from the U.S. So they had exhausted their chance to stay. If they do move forward with that, it would target that group. And it's also possible it could be broader. I mean, the fact that this has been made so public, you would have to imagine from the standpoint of ICE and their leadership there, that they may not want people to know exactly who is going to be arrested in this operation.
And you also mentioned that he broadcasts that these raids are happening. He did that last month and then also called them off last minute. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi played a big role in that last month. Do you know if she's playing any role now in trying to get these raids called off before Sunday?
You know, I'm not clear of her role of maybe talking to the president about it, but she did actually say earlier this week that she was warning people to protect themselves and to, you know, that they didn't need to answer the door if someone didn't have a warrant, things along those lines. So I think, you know, she may be an active voice out there again against this. I wouldn't be surprised with that. You know, as we've mentioned, mayors across the country have also been speaking out about this and saying that they don't want this to happen in their cities. One example actually was New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, who had tweeted out that this was actually proof that we needed to abolish ICE altogether. And then this morning, Trump actually took a shot back at de Blasio, you know, criticizing his job as mayor and saying that no one knows what he's actually doing and he's not working hard enough. But also, you know, Trump went out and said that most mayors want these actions to happen, which I think is up for debate with so many out there saying that they don't want it to happen in their cities.
We're also hearing that these raids stoked divisions and concerns among top officials at the Department of Homeland Security. There was a lot of reports of that for the ones that were mentioned previously. But what can you tell us about the clash around these raids at the department?
There's been reporting about tension behind the scenes over these actions going forward. I think what I can say and what I've heard is that sometimes officials at DHS will take more into consideration than just the action at hand. For instance, the repercussions beyond, you know, this action that could go forward over the weekend, the Homeland Security Department is actually due to be approved for a funding bill in Congress in the next few weeks. So I think that's something that leadership there takes into account. If there's, for instance, broad public backlash over these raids going forward or congressional backlash, it could make it harder for them to get the funding that they need approved when the time comes. So I think there are various factors they take into account beyond just upholding the law and moving forward with immigration laws.
Well, Deep Gulasekaram, professor of law at Santa Clara University, can you just give us the legal context of these raids? They are not illegal, right? I mean, they're part of the ordinary scope of ICE's work to remove people who have orders against them and have gone through the process.
Sure. There is statutory authority for ICE to go after, to arrest people who've already been adjudged removed from the country and then can essentially instate that order of removal and have them removed. But the concern here is that these people have been judged removed in instances where it's highly likely that they have not been given the due process that they are afforded both by the United States laws and by the Constitution of the United States. And so the ACLU and several advocacy groups filed suit in New York just yesterday. And their argument was that if you are going to attempt a raid of this magnitude and try and remove this many thousands of people on such a quick basis, the only way in which you're going to be able to do it is to get these families that have been recently crossing the border that who've been judged removed. But many of those families, as been well documented, have been the victims of massive bureaucratic, really incompetence in the way in which they've been given notice of their hearings, or really, in some cases, deliberate misinformation so that they would not be able to show up for court dates. These are all indication. These are all ways in which they've then been ruled removed in absentia. And it would be on the basis of those types of orders that many of these migrants might be removed.
So, Mickey Kaus, you're a journalist and immigration activist. And based on what you're hearing from Deep Gulasekaram, how do you feel about the administration carrying out these raids, federal immigration enforcement officials carrying them out, when, in fact, it sounds like their due process rights may have been violated?
Well, you know, some people's due process rights might have been short-circuited, but a lot of them haven't. And if you show up at your hearing, a minority show up, most of people ditch the hearings. If you show up at your hearing and you lose, the consequence should be that you leave the country. And if you don't leave the country voluntarily, ICE has to come and get you. Otherwise, we don't have law. Otherwise, the rule is you come here, you claim asylum. If you win your hearing, you stay. And if you lose your hearing, you stay. So why do we even have a hearing if the consequence is that the person stays, whatever happens? What this affirms to me is that basically once people are in the country claiming asylum, they're not going to leave. Even if we deported everybody that ICE was thinking of deporting today, it's a tiny, tiny minority of the million or so people who were deportable. So, you know, 99% of them are going to get to stay. The only solution is to reform the asylum laws and not let them in the country in the first place.
Well, first, Deep Gulasekaram, there have been studies on how likely folks are to return for their court dates. Can you give us some sense of what the numbers are behind that?
Sure. So, I mean, I will say that you can look at the ACLU's lawsuit filed yesterday, and they have significant data on what's happening here. As a general matter, when you're talking about especially families that are in the United States, families with young children, the absconding rate is not very high, especially when ICE uses techniques like telephonic monitoring, checking in with sponsors, in some cases ankle bracelet monitoring. But really, what's at issue here is if you look back, not just in the Trump administration, but going back even years before that, when this rocket docket system was created, that the notices that these migrant families get have dates that, A, don't exist. Some dates in which hundreds of people have showed up for immigration court when the immigration court was not hearing cases. In some cases, just missing information when the date of the court hearing is there. So I don't think it's as simple as saying some people didn't get their due process. These are people with valid asylum claims who've moved... at least they're a valid claim enough to be heard in court, who've come 2,000 miles to have that claim heard. This is not a group that believes in absconding and not showing up for their day in court.
And Ted Hessen of Politico, there were reported concerns from Department of Homeland Security Acting Secretary Kevin McAleenan that that children and babies could be picked up in this raid, family separations could occur. How much of a concern is that to DHS and to ICE? How much of their instructions are to take that into consideration?
You know, speaking with some former ICE officials, it seems like that's something that's always taken into account when you're moving forward with these operations. And it's definitely something that's at the forefront. You know, for instance, when they enter a house, it may be that they encounter a parent and the child isn't there at the moment. You know, during the weekday, it could mean a kid is at school. On a weekend, maybe the child is at another relative's house. You know, someone even brought up to me that it's a concern that you might enter a house and a kid is hides in a closet and you don't know the child is there, and then you leave with their parent and they're left alone. You know, one other thing that came up was potentially encountering someone who entered the U.S. maybe a year ago or a little more, and maybe they have a newborn baby at home that you weren't expecting when you enter the house. So I think there's all sorts of unpredictable scenarios that come into play when you're talking about families and potential troublesome scenarios. And I think what complicates that even more is the idea that in many of these cities, they're not going to get cooperation from law enforcement. And in some cases, you know, there might be political leadership that outright says they oppose these actions. So I think, you know, the fact that the president has made this so public and is moving forward with it in this way has raised some really serious concerns within DHS.
Mickey Kouse, are you comfortable with this administration essentially running these raids, given the fact that there are concerns from people within the department that it will be compromised in the sense that, you know, people have been given warnings, so they've left their homes, changed addresses, or that they... That basically it puts agents at risk now that this information has been broadcast by the president.
Well, you know, there are deportations going on all the time. They went on under Obama. They've been continuing under Trump at I think about the same level. And whether there's a surge of deportations as is supposedly going to happen tomorrow or not, they're constantly going on. And you have to do that if you're going to have credible immigration laws. Trump likes to broadcast things and make a big deal of them. And as you suggest, I'm not sure that's productive because it gets everybody's back up. And then it also he looks weak when he doesn't produce the necessary results. So I think it's probably ill-advised on his part. It's very similar to when he made a big fuss about stopping the caravans coming up from Central America. And then he didn't stop the caravans. They mostly got in. So then he looks even weaker than if he hadn't made a fuss about it in the first place.
But you still have confidence that they can be carried out in a safe way, that the immigrants who are detained will be able to be detained humanely. Well, you have levied criticism about how the migrants have been treated
in detention centers. Yes. I never have confidence in a massive bureaucracy, and there will always be screw-ups. And they're not going to get, you know, all the people that that they are seeking. They get a small percentage. It's very, very difficult for the reasons that that were outlined to do it humanely. That's why I think, again, we have to worry about stopping people from coming in on the front end, not deporting them once they're here.
Deep Gulasekaram, can you talk about what collateral deportations means?
So as I understand it, it's not a technical term used in immigration law and policy, but as I understand the administration to be using it, it is that in going after people who have already had these removal orders that are the specific targets that the administration wants to go after, perhaps they know where they are, that if there are other non-citizens in with them in the area, in the home, that they can go after them as well. They can take them into custody and then prosecute them for removal. That's what it suggests to me. It also is an indication that first of all, there are a lot of mixed status families, people with lots of different immigration statuses within the family. And I think this is suggesting that if we come after a family member and we know that there are other family members in the house, that they're all going to come together and then we'll sort it out later.
And again, Deep Gulasekaram is professor of law at Santa Clara University School of Law. We're also joined by Mickey Kaust, a journalist who writes at KaustFiles.com, and Ted Hessen, immigration reporter for Politico. And Ted Hessen, I know you need to leave us before the break, and so I just wanted to ask you what you are watching for moving forward with these raids. I understand that though they are to begin Sunday, they're supposed to continue into early next week.
I think Mickey raised a good point in that even though the president has said they're going forward Sunday, we don't know exactly what they'll be. Mm-hmm. I have been hearing from some people that they could be staggered, that this could be an operation that doesn't take place in one day. We've also heard about it happening in multiple major metropolitan areas, so we won't be really clear about where they might move forward and when. You know, and I think it's also a good point to make that removals are happening all the time, and that this isn't something that ICE is only going to do start Sunday and end on Tuesday. There's some degree of this constantly happening, and you know, we may not see quite as much as what the president's promising, but I guess it remains to be seen.
Ted Hessen of Politico, thanks for talking with us this morning.
Thank you.
And I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. What are your reactions, questions about the impending raids? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. ICE raids are expected Sunday in about a dozen cities nationwide, and it's unclear when exactly they will end, but some 2,000 undocumented immigrants with removal orders are being targeted. You can also tell us your thoughts on that via email at forum@kqed.org, on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. I'm Mina Kim. More after the break. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials are planning to execute raids on at least 2,000 undocumented immigrants nationwide. The sweeps on Sunday and into next week could reportedly include collateral arrests of family members or others on the scene. Last month, President Trump, in a tweet, canceled similar planned raids shortly before they were to take place, though he did affirm this morning that they will begin Sunday. We're looking at the latest developments on his immigration policies with Deep Gulasekaram, professor of law at Santa Clara University School of Law. He teaches constitutional and immigration law and is co-author of The New Immigration Federalism. We're also joined by Mickey Kaust. He's a journalist and immigration activist, and he writes at KaustFiles.com. We're also joined by you, our listeners. What are your reactions, questions about the raids? Call us at 866-733-6786. Post your comment on our website, on Facebook, on Twitter, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Chris writes, will the raids be taken out only on the Latinx immigrant community? It seems as though this one group is being targeted. Is that true? Is that legal? Deep Gulasekram, reportedly it is recent migrant families that crossed the border, though of course they are not all Latinx immigrants. Can you tell us if you know that that is the main target of these sweeps?
Well, I think as a matter of demographics, if you're going to say that it's going to be families that have recently crossed the border seeking asylum, it is most likely going to be targeted against families that are coming from Central American Northern Triangle countries. Probably a significant amount will be from El Salvador. It is not that the administration is clearly not saying that this is based on a particular racial group or racial background. But the fact is, immigration enforcement is always unevenly visited upon certain minority groups.
Well, let's go to our calls. I'm going to start with Danny in Oakland. Hi, Danny.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. My question is, I've never been served with a warrant, but I have dealt with legal cases, and legalese is not that easy to understand for the layman. So I'm wondering if, I know there's a difference between an administrative warrant and one that's signed by a judge. Is there something specific on the paperwork or website or some kind of photo that we can see so that people know what exactly to look for in the differences in those warrants?
Danny, thanks. I'll go back to our law professor on that, Deep Gulasekram.
Thank you for the question. It is a very important distinction. Any judicial warrant, and that is the only type of warrant for which one has to actually open up a door, let people in, and allow compliance with it, will have the name of the court written on the document right up front. It will be signed by a judge. It might be a state court judge, it might be a federal judge, but it will be signed by the judge and will have the name of the court on the front of the warrant. An administrative warrant will say the word warrant, but other than saying the word warrant, it is not really, it does not have the same legal force as a warrant. And instead of a court or a judge's signature, will have the name of the federal administrative agency, in this case, ICE or Department of Homeland Security, and it'll be signed by an immigration officer, not by a judge.
Deep Gulasekram, can you just describe briefly how these raids tend to be carried out, what the activities are of ICE agents, if they follow some kind of a template of any kind?
It's hard to say if there's a template. ICE has been inconsistent at the times at which it's carried out these raids. Sometimes the raids have focused on specific workplaces like meatpacking plants, etc. When they've come into communities, it's oftentimes because they have advanced knowledge that there is a particular house or a particular area to go to. But I think that's partly what makes there's obviously the legal question of whether these people have the right process. But really, the larger political question is what these raids accomplish weighed against the dangers and costs of these sorts of raids. And so one of the things you're already seeing, as advocates have reported, people not going to work, people not going to school, people not going to hospitals, people not showing up to court dates. Why? Because as you indicate, that's how ICE knows where people are and then tends to go to those places to accomplish the raids.
So it sounds like you're saying that you don't think raids are effective immigration policy.
Well, if you think about it, there are large immigration concerns in this country. There are 11 million people without status in the country. There is a growing number of people coming to the border running from failed states in Central America. The idea of over a few days going after a couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand migrants is in no way going to solve these large-scale immigration problems. But in the meantime, this sort of reckless and haphazard approach certainly sows a significant amount of fear in immigrant communities. It sows fear beyond the particular targets of the immigration raid. And I don't think it's good for anybody in our communities when people are not going to work, school, hospitals, or court dates.
Well, let me hear from Antonio in Oakland. Hi, Antonio. You're on.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my phone call. I have two observations. One is that I believe the president is using, once again, the immigrant community to raise up his numbers. It's elections coming, and he promised his base that he will do this and this and that. So he did it in 2016. Now he's, again, all political approach. They use the community to increase those numbers, and then he can stand by next week and say, look what I did, and it's been done. And that's one observation. The other one is what did you just say early, how the panic in the community creates a lot of insulation and hiding, and I wonder whether the economic impact is among small business and business when the communities they don't go outside to purchase food or go to the hospital, or they don't trust even the police officers when they need to report some crime that is happening in their neighborhood or in their community.
Antonio, thank you. Mickey Kouse, based on what you're hearing, do you think raids, ICE raids, are effective immigration policy? I know you believe that they are, of course, within the scope of ICE's authority and can be conducted, but do you think they should be?
Well, yes, I do. We can't have a system where once you cross the border and get into illegally, once you illegally cross the border and get into the interior of the country, you're home free. There's no way you're going to be deported. That's a huge lure. In fact, the current surge of influx of people that Trump is so desperate to stop started arguably when the Obama administration announced that unless you were convicted of another crime when you're here, ICE wasn't going to come and get you. So people said, well, all I have to do is get past the border, and I'm home free. And the coyotes told them that. So the only thing that will stop that lure is if people realize that, and they see examples of people returning home, that that you're not home free. You might be subject to deportation if you sneak in. So I do think you have to have some deportations. I'm not sure that the panic in the community is a good substitute. If you could deport people and not have the panic, that would be much better. The Trump administration is so desperate, they look for deterrence when they're not there. For example, some have argued that the conditions in the detention centers will deter people. Well, that's crazy. If people, you know that once they're released, they're going to be home free. They're going to suffer whatever conditions exist. So that's anything that would deter people would be unconscionable, would be too cruel. So the Trump administration should just give that up. And I wonder if this idea that the shock and awe of this current surge that's supposed to be happening tomorrow will somehow deter people is equally ephemeral. I don't think it'll have much lasting impact. But I do think you have to actually deport people so people can say, well, my neighbor went to the United States and he or she is back again. I guess that route doesn't work. I think you have to have that.
Well, undocumented immigrants, Nelson writes, are, quote, a huge drain on this country socially and economically and must be deported. Beth writes, why announce these ICE sweeps if you want the surprise factor? Wouldn't this simply allow local governments in sanctuary areas to be better prepared to thwart ICE? And Deep Kulasekaram, Mickey Kouse's comment that once you get in, there really is no way you're going to be deported. Is that true?
It is clearly not true. But that said, I think Mr. Kouse is right that if you look at the number of undocumented people in the country, roughly 11-12 million people who are unlawfully present, at working at capacity, internal enforcement in the United States in its largest year of removal in the first couple of years of the Obama administration removed roughly a little over 400,000 people. So that is maybe 4% of the unlawfully present population in the United States. But that is a function of several different factors, including limited resources for the DHS, or at least resources that have to be deployed in certain ways. And I think one of the dangers of these sorts of raids, going back to the question you asked, is that if what we're really after is reducing community safety threats, reducing public safety threats, then it really makes zero sense to go after families that are fleeing from violence in Central America, who came to the border, presented themselves for asylum, and then use them as the group to target, to remove, in the idea that this is somehow going to produce public safety benefits for the United States.
Well, Patty writes, I live in a part of Santa Rosa that consists primarily of immigrants. It's terrible to witness the fear in the eyes of children and families due to the threats of raids. I'll be attending a local rally at Courthouse Square this evening to call for the shutdown of these child concentration camps and to stop the raids scheduled for this Sunday. I think she's referring to the border detention centers there. Patty's comment reminds me of an ACLU lawsuit that was filed, I believe, yesterday, somewhat preemptively before these raids. Can you explain what the ACLU is trying to do, Deep Kulasekaram?
Right. So the ACLU lawsuit filed in New York York is essentially just saying, at least for this particular group who is going to be the likely target of these raids coming up, the people who've recently crossed and may have missed a court date, been not notified of a court date, etc., it is saying if you attempt to try and remove them quickly, you are going to be violating the laws of the United States and the due process that is guaranteed to them underneath the Constitution. They have not had, in the ACLU's allegations, their fair day in court to make their claim.
Well, thanks for more clarification on that. And I'm going to go to Neil next. Neil in San Francisco, join us.
Yeah, thank you. One broad political comment and one narrow practical question. The comment is, I would very much like it if the Democrats, the left, good people, which can very much include Republicans, would start with this notion of needing to deport a certain group, which is legitimate, before we move on to all of the reasons, and they are many, why doing it in this way is not the right way to go about it. But just to gain credibility, including with Trump's base, so to speak, to start off with saying, look, there's lots of people there in the country illegally. Some of them have deportation orders. We need to come up with a good way to get those people out. But here's why we're not going to do it with raids and scaring people and everything. Just otherwise, we're just going down this path of Trump appeals to his base and the Democrats or the left, you know, just point out all of the problems with the way he's doing it rather than trying to come with a solution to some of the immigration questions. So that's the comment. And then the question is, for these collateral arrests, do any of your guests have any advice about what persons who are not subject to an order of removal who are present are required or are not required to disclose about their status when ICE comes in and says, hey, we're looking for Joe who has the deportation order, but Jackie, you're here. What's your status? What, if any, obligation does Jackie have to say about her immigration status? I think that would be very practical for people in that situation.
Neil, thanks. Deep Kulasekram, do you want to answer that second part of Neil's point about what happens to the folks who are swept up who weren't specifically targeted?
Right. So those people, regardless whether there's a raid or not, obviously, if ICE encounters people and they have some reasonable belief that that person has is out of status or is unlawfully present, they can attempt to arrest them and engage in enforcement activities against them. But so I think some of the things to remember are right up front. One does not need to allow ICE agents into homes unless they have a judicial warrant, which they rarely have. Workplaces, if they're so inclined, can stop ICE from coming in, exercise their rights, their Fourth Amendment rights, to have a warrant before ICE comes in and does workplace raids. Once an ICE agent is talking to somebody, law enforcement has the opportunity to ask for identification from an individual, but the person is not obligated to reveal anything else about themselves or their status. If ICE thinks that they have a reasonable basis for taking that person in, they can certainly attempt to take them in and prosecute them. I will just say that there's lots of documentation of this. When ICE doesn't have very good information about the people it's going after, which is often, they often will end up taking into custody people who are lawful permanent residents of the country and citizens. And I'm not talking about numbers that are minuscule. These are substantial numbers of lawfully present people that ICE tends to sweep in these large, undifferentiated raids.
Well, according to the Cato Institute, from 2006 to 2017, ICE wrongfully detained more than 3,500 U.S. citizens just in the state of Texas.
Right. I mean, this is part of, as I said at the beginning, it is not just a matter of a few people being unfortunately wrapped up in this. These are large numbers, right? And these are United States citizens who likely, because of who they live with in mixed status families, because of their surnames, because they happen to be Latinx population, get swept up. And I think that is the concern when you do immigration enforcement in this manner, in this sort of reckless, haphazard manner, as a scare tactic, as Mickey Kaus was saying, I think this is bound to happen.
But where and how long are these citizens or permanent residents held?
So they can at some point attempt to show that they are not should not be the subject of the enforcement action. But in that time, they might be held in immigration detention. Some people have actually been deported and then had to fight their way back into the United States. But I think one of the difficulties of immigration law is how complex it is, and it is difficult without legal representation to make that showing of lawful presence.
And Mickey Kass, you want to get in here?
Yeah, I'm not impressed by a 3,500 number over a decade in a huge state like Texas. So 350 people a year have to spend a few days in jail versus having an immigration law. It seems to me that it's not a huge price to pay.
They are United States citizens.
They're United States citizens, and they get detained, and they shouldn't be detained, and then they get released. That can happen to any of us, but it's a price we pay. And the purpose of these raids is not to assure public safety, not to get the murderers and the robbers off the streets. A lot of the people ICE is going to be targeting are going to be those people. But the larger purpose is to enforce the immigration laws. We're now in a situation where anybody in Central America or anywhere in the world, they're coming from Africa now, they're coming from everywhere, can just say, oh, I'm an asylum claimant, come to the United States, ask for a hearing, not show up at the hearing. If they lose the hearing, they get to stay, because as soon as the government tries to deport them, everybody kicks up a fuss and says, oh, they're doing it the wrong way. So basically, we now have a situation where, as a coyote told a recent, I think it was Newsweek publication, Trump was wrong. He's invited everybody in the world to come here, and there's no way we can get them out. It's not a question of ensuring that murderers are off the streets. It's a question of stopping all the good people in the world who want to come to the United States. We can't take all the good people in the world because there are 8 billion of them.
Well, Mickey Kass, let me ask you a question. I don't think all 8 billion people, of course, are trying to get to the United States, but it reminds me of Neil's earlier point that he wishes that the left could agree on some core fundamentals, including the need for deportations. How does the right generally perceive Democrats' stances on immigration? I mean, do they see as nuanced as Neil is pointing out it is, or do they pretty much see it as, you know, more extreme?
No, I thought that was a very good point that Neil made, a very important point, because the Democrats have moved way to the left of Obama, who deported a lot of people and accepted the need for deportation. Hillary, in her campaign in 2016, departed from that and said, no, we don't want to deport anybody who's not a criminal. So that there was the radical step. And we saw in the debates that the Democrats are not willing to abandon that stance that Hillary Clinton took. So, yes, it's hard to take them seriously if they say, once you snuck into the country and you're here, you get to stay and we're never going to deport you. I think Neil is right. The Democrats should establish that initial credibility where they say, okay, if you're here illegally, you can be deported. Now let's talk about how many immigrants we should have, what the criteria for staying should be, how the raids should be conducted. That would be a much better debate.
Well, let me read some more online comments coming in. VJ writes, ICE officials are doing their job, deporting people who have overstayed their visas or are without any visa. Sam Liccardo should work on fixing San Jose roads, clearing rampant homelessness. Mayor Sam Liccardo was with us at the top of the hour. Keith says, if I traveled to Switzerland on a temporary visa and illegally never left and took advantage of their free health care and other social programs, a part of me would always know that I had done something wrong. I would be disappointed if I were discovered and deported, but I would not consider it unjust. This listener tweets, if there are no consequences, there is no law, is a really bad argument. It sounds good at first until it's discovered that laws weren't followed by the enforcers themselves. I'm going to go next to Ariana in San Francisco. Hi, Ariana.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. My question relates to the process once a person is picked up by ISIS and returned to their country of origin. Do they have time to gather belongings, money, transfer funds out of their bank account? So when they land back in their country of origin, or do they have anything to support themselves at that time?
Ariana, thanks. When they're picked up by ICE, Deep Gulasekaram.
So it really depends on the nature of the enforcement proceeding. If somebody is in the country and they're picked up by ICE, they get a notice to appear, and this is going to be a full-blown immigration court proceeding with multiple dates scheduled in advance, that group of people may have time to get their affairs in order either by themselves or through an attorney. But if we're talking about people who might be caught up in expedited removal proceedings, which the Trump administration is increasingly using, there is a great risk that it's not clear if they'll be able to gather their belongings, talk to family members. As was mentioned at the earlier in the program, there's also a great risk that they're separated from family members, including minor children that they may be in charge of, in taking care of.
Well, let's go next to John in San Francisco. Hi, John.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. This is a bit self-indulgent. I have no solution to the immigration crisis or laws or what should be done, and I think a lot of what we're hearing about makes sense on both sides. But what strikes me as so frustrating and rather disingenuous is when pro-immigrant folks will use the word as immigrants or immigrant community. When I think of immigrants, I think of what this country is all about. It's clearly the cultural fabric of what America is about. Basic education is going to bring that to your attention. And the idea that many immigrants have contributed unbelievable contributions to America and American society is without a doubt. But I think it's important to draw a distinction between legal and illegal immigration. A very clear separation requires completely different behavior. And just like any other illegal behavior, there are consequences and there should be. So co-opting legal immigration to make an argument for unfettered immigration, I think is wildly unfair and it muddies the waters. I'd love to know I don't really know what can be said about that. Like I said, this might be self-indulgent, but I think people need to be cautioned when they speak about the immigrant community, that there, in fact, are two now in America. And one is assimilated, and I refuse to think of that as a racist word, and some aren't. Well, I think for a lot of people who've been here, it's a huge difference.
Well, John, let me get a quick response from Deep Gulasekaram.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a complicated question. I think that people would like to believe that these are neat separations, that we can talk about unlawful migration versus lawful migration. But a couple things that might help complicate that notion. The first is that families are often of mixed status, so that you will have people, siblings in the same family, parents and children who have different immigration statuses, some of them lawful, perhaps some of them unlawful. And that presents hard questions of then how to engage enforcement against those against that group. But when we think more broadly, I think the real concern is how do you construct a migration system that actually accounts not just for what the types of laws that we want to enforce in the United States, but doesn't engage in magical or fantastical thinking about the way in which migration actually works in the world. Right now, I think we're in a mode where we believe that by strong enforcement, we will be able to control migration in the United States. That has never been true in the millennia, in the history of the world for millennia, and it's certainly not true now. It has to account for the very realistic pull factors in the United States, such as the needs of the labor market, which feasts on undocumented labor in the United States, and the push factors in really failed states in Central America, where people are willing to risk a 2,000 journey with two-month-old babies, knowing that there's a high risk of death in order to make a claim for asylum in the United States, in order to attempt to make it in the United States. Those are factors that are unlikely to be deterred by small enforcement actions in the United States or even a show of force at the border.
I would dispute that we've never controlled our borders. From 1921 to around 1965, we had very strong immigration laws that were enforced. Immigration levels were very low. And that happens to be the era when the American middle class was forged and our common identity was forged. Not that we shouldn't let in more immigration, but it can be controlled. And this recent surge followed a loosening and the discovery of loopholes in the asylum laws, most particularly these memos from the Obama administration saying if you get in past the border, you're home free. And the second was a ruling by a judge that said if you come with a kid, you have to be released in 20 days. And people in Central America saw that, the coyotes saw that, and the surge started. So if we go back and eliminate those loopholes and overrule that court ruling and change those memos, presumably the surge will stop. So it's not that it's beyond our control and there's nothing we can do because these people are so determined to come here. There are reasons they're coming here, and we can change those reasons.
Well, Mickey Kaus, Deep Gluis Akram is shaking his head quite vigorously, so I'll just give you another 30 seconds on this, Deep Gluis Akram.
Sure. I mean, I think that's wrong as a matter of history. It's also wrong as a matter of caricaturing, I think, what people describe as the situation of the border. As a matter of history, the time that Mickey Kaus refers to was also the time where the United States had the Bracero program, which was bringing in millions of Mexican migrants for temporary labor, a program that was stopped in 1965. But at that same time, during the Bracero program, significant numbers of people who were unlawfully entering the United States at the behest of large agricultural interests that were here. Second, that when it's the loophole that Mickey refers to is a law passed by Congress, which specifically gives people the opportunity to ask for asylum in the United States. Now, I completely agree that the situation on the ground today, the asylum laws may not have contemplated the large numbers of people coming to the southern border of the United States. But this is not a loophole so much as this is a law, and that if we want to rethink that law, we can rethink that law. The number of people coming to the United States and the court rulings about children were instituted in the 1980s and the 1990s. So it's hard to make a causal argument that somehow the knowledge of that is going to force people to come to the United States.
Well, Mimi writes, both sides need to move to the middle. But Trump's extreme views and racism fuel the fire for protesting against ICE raids. Your guest statement that a citizen being arrested and spending a few days in jail could happen to any of us is a lie. White citizens don't need to fear this. Daniel writes, I think the people coming here today should have the same quality of opportunity that my ancestors had. ICE raids are a lagging indicator of racism and xenophobia. American immigration needs to become great again. Mickey Kaus, journalist and immigration activist who writes at KausFiles.com, thanks for joining us this morning with your thoughts.
Thank you.
And Deep Gluis Akram, professor of law at Santa Clara University School of Law, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And thanks to our listeners for their questions and comments. Another Hour Forum is next. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.